Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, motherfucker, the Lord accept me. Harlem, Washington Heights, nigga. Independent, I'm the fucking boss. The only unsigned nigga with a quarter bill of the sword. The hood is not stupid. We know the mathematics. I make double what I would going over Atlantic. From EMI, Sony, BMG, and a scope. Would never sign a rapper with the White House in a scope. They push pop music like a religion. Anorexic, celebrity driven, financial fantasy fiction. Contradiction of the life we was given.
Unlimited Combat Sports Show. Tonight we have a guest, Fareed Kader, who's really been all around the MMA business. And we interviewed him last week already, so we got a heads up. We know what to ask to bring the best out of him. And it's going to be just myself here for the first 45 minutes or so, and then Tony's going to pop in a little bit later. But Fareed Hurricane Kader, we're going to get him right on the line right now. Thiago just fought this past weekend, so not too long ago there. Ask him a little bit about him. He had a tough fight.
Hello.
Hey, Fareed.
Hey, Rich, what's going on?
Hey, how's it going? We're gonna do it right this time. We got it going on two recorders, so.
Last time I told you, it sounded like it didn't work. So.
Yeah, better to get it perfect than not at all. But anyway, we're gonna get right to the questions. We got you on for as long as you can hang in with us. But I recognized a lot of the points last week where you were making some real good points. First of all, let's talk a little bit about Paulo Thiago, a guy you fought before, just had a big fight this past UFC, I'm sure you watched. What'd you think?
Yep. As I told you last time, Paulo Thiago is a guy who always jumps in the cage to finish the fight, So I'm not surprised. Again, I got the fight of the night because Diego Sanchez is the same kind of guy, you know, when he jumped in the cage. We like him or we don't like him, but we have to accept, you know, two fighters jump in the cage to finish the fight. So they didn't finish it, but they did their best, and it was a great fight, you know. Always always great to watch those kind of guys.
Yeah, it was an interesting fight. I thought Thiago was winning early and then just kind of fell apart in the end. Diego poured it on, too, you know.
Yeah, it was good. You know, we saw a lot of good things on the ground, good takedown, awesome takedown from Diego Sanchez, good stand-up with a couple of punches. It was good. It was they show that they have a lot of different skills, and then they complete fighter, you know.
Yeah, cool. And what's your ultimate goal in the sport of mixed martial arts for yourself?
Sorry?
What's your ultimate goal in the sport of MMA?
You know, I want to go to the top. You know, I don't have any limits. As I did my judo career, I do the same in MMA. I don't have any complex. I don't have any problem to think that I can be the best. You know, I was always thinking like that when I was a judo guy, and as an MMA fighter. I think the same, you know. If I don't think that I can be the best right now, I don't have any reason, you know, to fight. I'm fighting to show the world I'm able to be the best. And so that's my goal, you know, to go to the top and be the best fighter.
One of the points that I made last week that you talked a lot about was seems lately that a lot of fights are staying on the feet, you know, and I was wondering whether that's a stylistic thing or whether it's just the sport evolving, and you really talked a lot about that, so just tee off on that one again and tell us the whole deal about, you know, the striking and the crowd and all that.
Yeah, again, you know, I want to I think, you know, boxing is a great sport for MMA, you know. Definitely, you know, with punches, we become a very, very exciting and efficient fighter. Is why this weekend we saw a great Cain Velasquez, because he's a wrestler. Well, we have to accept it, you know. He's a good wrestler. But he can decide, you know, to stay on his feet, and he can decide to finish the fight on his feet. It is why Brock Lesnar, who is still a young fighter, even if he was UFC champion, you know, he doesn't have the skills, you know, to be the best in the world. And what we saw this weekend is just an MMA fighter with good wrestling skills, with good hands. And the guy who want to jump and fight, jump in the cage and fight Cain Velasquez has to be good on their feet. You know, he just going to beat them up. And it will happen with Minotaur. You know, he couldn't go to the ground, and Velasquez won by knockout. And it will happen again with Brock Lesnar, you know. So I think this weekend was a good weekend for me, you know, because I see the type of things about MMA, and I show exactly what I wanna see, you know. You have to be great on your feet. You have to have a good defense on takedown. You have to be able to bring the fight on the ground if you want. So you need definitely to be a good wrestler, but you need to be good on your feet. And, you know, it's not a problem of weight also, you know. That's a different problem, you know. But this weekend we saw a guy, you know, smaller than Brock Lesnar, and just show the world he was able to beat him up. And we saw also fight with Jake Shields and Tapman. The guy cut his weight, you know, and at the end he was weak. And I think that's not a problem of weight, that's a problem of skills, you know. So this weekend was a what you get from me, you know. You just show me what I want to see.
And you have a favorite style or submission that you try to fight along those lines, or you know, you try to mix everything together, obviously, but is there something that you favor in your disciplines?
Sorry, I didn't hear.
Is there some type of submission or style of fighting that you favor in your own fighting?
A submission, you know, definitely it's better when you're in, you are on the top, you know. For MMA, it's better to keep the top. Because when you're on your back, you know, you can get some damage. That's the difference between MMA and grappling or jiu-jitsu, you know. From your back, you can do great stuff, you know. You have some great submission from your back, from the bottom. But it's often, you know, very difficult to do all those techniques properly, you know, when the guy tries to punch you, and worse, when he uses elbows, like in UFC. We could see some good technique, for example, before in Japan, in Pride, because people didn't use elbows. So punches, you know, you can always, you know, continue to try the submission. But elbows, you know, you get a cut and the fight is over. So that's really difficult, you know, to use the technique from the bottom. So definitely I pick the technique from the top. I like the side control. I like the mount. And I like to do the simple technique, like armbar, side choke. You know, technique will always let you free, you know, to switch for ground and pound or get up quickly and continue the fight on your feet. I just don't want to spend all my energy, you know, just to finish the fight with a crazy situation, because I know it's going to make me maybe tired or, you know, or maybe it's going to be very difficult for me to finish the guy like that.
And it's a new release.
The website popped up a commercial on me.
Hey, I'm buying it. Oh, let's check out what it's playing.
Not letting me phone you. I went to the UFC website and I got obliterated with the ad there. Sorry. But, looking at that card was kind of interesting because so many fights went to decisions. You know, there were no submissions. And then we had the main event. We all know what
happened. Decision shouldn't exist in MMA. As I told you the last time, I don't know why we want to give a decision. It doesn't make any sense to make a guy win the fight if he didn't finish the fight. And we saw, I think, three decisions. You know, I didn't agree with the decision, you know. Tabman, Shields, so the guy said, yeah, he controlled the fight. We don't speak about grappling much. We speak about MMA. That's the ultimate fighting. The only thing you try to do, you jump in the cage, you try to beat up the guy. You don't try to show the world you can keep the side control or the mount or get him back. We don't care about that. At the end, two guys finish the fight. One couldn't walk, one was fresh. And the guy who couldn't walk got the decision. Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
You know? That's the difference with ultimate fighting and grappling. For sure, if it was a grappling match, Shields won the fight. It was not a grappling match. We speak about MMA. So I don't want to say either Akadman won the fight, but for me, it was a draw.
Yeah.
And a lot of fight, you know, is like that. It's very close. At the end, we always get a decision. Why you want to give a decision? It's better, you know, to let it draw and that's all. And I still remember the fight between Sonnen and Anderson Silva. It's a great example, I think. After three rounds, you could give the decision to Sonnen for sure. 95% of the people, or maybe 100, will give the decision to sooner. But 2 months after, it gets leaked. And that's all. That is the truth of the fight. After 5 rounds, the guy who won the fight was Anderson Silva and not Sonnen. Sonnen dominated the fight 15 minutes. To dominate in fighting doesn't mean that you win the fight. You can dominate and at the end you can lose. There's a huge difference. And again, after this weekend, you know, I think we should stop to give decision. We should give draw. When the fight go until the end of the fight is a draw. That's all.
Yeah, that's a unique take on it. And I think you would see guys trying to end fights a little bit more if that were true. I don't know if that'll ever happen, but some league should do that. You know, that would be cool if they did.
Yeah, you know, and maybe we change also the mind of the fighter, you know. Many guys that just jump in the cage and try to win the fight. That's not an Olympic sport. We don't care about the gold medal. We want to jump in the cage and beat the guy.
Mm-hmm.
We're not there to get a decision. We don't care about the decision. We want to beat the guy. And some guys, you know, just take a little advantage on the first round and then they just try to keep the advantage. I used to do that in judo, but that's different. It was an Olympic sport. The only goal was to win the fight. And I didn't care if the people were happy with what they saw. I was just on the mat to win my fight. In MMA, it's different. That's a professional sport, and you make your life, you make your money with the people who come and buy the ticket, who go and pay the people of you. You need to be an exciting fighter. You have to try to finish the fight. That's the point. That's a huge difference. We are not here to get medals. We don't care about medals. We want to fight and make exciting fight for everybody. And too many guys just want to win the decision, and that's all. I think if we give a draw and nobody gets the bonus at the end, the bonus of the win, you know, maybe the fighter will take more risk. You know, we should say that, okay? You don't get your bonus if you finish with a draw.
Yeah.
And at the end, you know, everybody gonna try to win the fight. And to win the fight, you will have only one way, is to finish the fight.
Right. Well, that's one way.
And I think it will make the fight exciting.
One way the UFC tries to shake things up, they give big bonuses to people for submissions and knockouts in the fight of the night. You know, just to get people to step up. But in some ways, it's kind of unfair for the people that don't get any bonuses and they're only getting paid like $10,000 per fight. And, you know, whether it's just because they have a name or not, or whether it's just circumstance, you know, these guys should be getting paid a lot more if they're only fighting, you know, 3 or 4 times a year or something in the UFC, which is, I think, about the average the guys fight. But it all depends on, you know, what kind of a suspension you get if it's a tough fight. And I just listed some of the suspensions from UFC 121, and it was like, crazy. A lot of guys out for a while now, and to imagine a guy who's only getting paid $10,000 a fight to go in there and get his butt, and he can't even train anymore for a few months. Never mind, you know, get ready to fight again anytime soon, and he doesn't get a bonus, but another guy that fought just as hard as him does. And he wins his fight, but some other guy edges him out on the bonuses. You know, so in some ways it's fair, in some ways it's unfair, but the way it is right now, and I don't know, I just think they need to ramp up the pay scale overall for fighters. How have you found it in your experience getting paid?
You know, I think everybody should get a bonus, you know, for a submission or for a knockout. Because that only the things will make the show exciting is why the people watch, you know, anime. So if you have 3 knockouts in the night and 2 submissions, you should give bonus to everybody. Why you decide this one was better than this one? You know, I think that would be fair to give the bonus to the balcony. So it wouldn't be any more problem, you know, if you just give the bonus if the guy finish the fight. Maybe you could pay the guy more, you know, and you will make them more maybe angry, you know, before the fight, because they really try to win the fight. But then, you know, even that, that's true, you know, the props, they are too small. When you fight in UFC, there's a huge organization right now in the world, and you see guys, they fight for $3,000 after the taxes, you know. If they were in undercard, they don't get any sponsor, you know. They go back home with less than $5,000. What you want to do with $5,000? If you train hard every day, if you want to do everything you need to do to be a champ, I think you need more than $5,000 or more to live.
Yeah.
Because you need to live in the you need good condition. Right now, I think I'm lucky because I have a sponsor, a permanent sponsor, you know, who take care of my career, you know. But right now, for example, I can be properly on diet. But it means that if I want to cut my weight properly, you know, I need to buy expensive food. It's more expensive to eat well, you know.
Right.
For sure, if I'm going every day to McDonald's or Taco Bell, I will eat for a cup of dollar every day. But at the end, you know, I will get 25 pounds of fat. So
yeah.
If I want to eat well, I need more money.
Yeah.
So then it's the same for training. If I was just to show up at the gym and train with the class, even the pro class, it's okay. You're going to maybe become a good fighter, but not the best. To be one of the best, you need to work with the best, and you need to do private. And private is expensive. If you work with the best coach right now, you know, at least you're going to be something like $100 one hour, you know. And you need a lot of hours a week. You need at least 10 hours a week, you know, on private.
Mm-hmm.
To be sure your ground is great, your stand-up is great. So, but if 10 hours by 100 is like $1,000 a week, we speak about $1,000 a week to train. And we speak about maybe $300-$400 a week to eat.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean that just to live and your rent and your car, you need $7,000-$10,000 if you want to train like a professional.
Right.
Like the people who make money live right now. Because a guy like Brock Lesnar progressed a lot. Each time, you know, even if he lost this weekend, he's better.
$500,000 to fight.
Yeah, he's better now. But why? Because he has all the coaching around him every day. He has all the sparring with him every day.
Yeah.
That's expensive.
Yeah.
If you want to run a gym like that, or if you want to do your training camp like that, that's a lot of money, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't expect to fight in the big show if you're not ready to train like a professional, and you can't show up just to say, okay, I'm going to try. It doesn't work. When you fight, guy who train every day like a professional, every day with the best, you can't beat them. Maybe one time in your career, surprise, but 90% of the time you're going to lose.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I think that's ridiculous, you know, to pay a guy like $5,000, $10,000, $3,000, you know, when the organization make a lot of money, you know, they should respect more the fighter, because without fighter, they can't run their business.
Well,
so they should more respect the fighter.
Well, you got a sport like boxing that's taking all kinds of hits in the press. People are saying it's going out of style, you know, it's falling apart, and maybe in the U.S. that's true, but worldwide, it's still, on average, I think, paying guys a lot better per fight. And, you know, you think about it, a boxing match is four rounds max when you're first starting out, and it's only 3 minutes. So that's 12 minutes max. You know, you're going to have 15 minutes in the cage, and it's going to be 5 minutes at a time, and you're open to a lot more damage. You know, the statistics are still out on whether MMA is safer than boxing per se, but I know for a fact that one study already came out that said that there's far more concussions on average in MMA than in boxing, at any level, you know. So it's still growing, you know, but a lot of people think that MMA is overtaken boxing in the States, and it's kind of true as far as the market share, I think. You know, a lot more people are watching it and paying attention to it than they are boxing here in the United States. You know, but worldwide, you know, you look at other countries like Mexico. I mean, you look at Cain Velasquez. He's the only guy to come out of Mexico to be a big, you know, recognizable champion in the UFC. So, you know, there you go. But in boxing in Mexico, it's everywhere. You know, you can find a card almost every night in some city in Mexico boxing. It's huge.
Yeah. And,
you know, there's a lot of countries like that, but... Then you got these guys trying to make it a gimmick, you know. You got guys coming over from boxing to MMA, like James Toney, and you know, Ray Mercer, all that. Now Kimbo's going back to boxing from MMA. It's just it's kind of crazy the way they do that boxing versus MMA standoff all the time. They're always talking about it, but I don't know. It seems like MMA is sort of evolving towards being more like boxing in a lot of ways with the stand-up. I've noticed these guys just, I talked about it last week, and you mentioned some of the reasons behind it, but it seems like the crowd just loves to see that slugfest in the middle of the cage, and they go nuts.
Yeah.
And, you know, guys get put on a big show, and even actually Gabriel Gonzaga, a guy, was just on a card in the UFC, said to me when I interviewed him down in Massachusetts, you know, you really got to put on a show. That's why, you know, certain people get thrown out of the UFC when they don't put on a show. You know, he could lose fights like the one he lost to Randy Couture, and they're not going to throw him out of the UFC because he tried like a bastard, you know. He went out there and put his best foot forward, and even though he got beat, he was still fighting to the very end. So he made a real good point to me then. You know, you really have to put on a show in MMA now. The crowd just gets restless. Or the, you know, the promoters don't like it. They'll throw you out if you get gassed. You know, in the case of the UFC sometimes. I don't know. Have you seen that a lot? Pressure to be more on the feet or be more like boxing and do more boxing? Slug with guys toe-to-toe?
No, I don't think so. I think we feel free to do whatever we want, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just seems to me sometimes like whether it's the crowd that really gets guys to do it, or, you know, it's just that it's there. It's the skill that they like to use the most. It's the most fun thing to do is just punch a guy in the face. I don't know what it is, but it seems like the last few big cards that I've watched on TV, especially the UFC, have gone almost entirely towards striking. You know, standing on the feet, striking, doing a lot of boxing. And it's just happened over the last few months, I've noticed, more than anything, you know, because usually you see a lot of balance cards, you know, different types of decisions, and then you get a card like this that comes along, and it's just like, we talked about it last week before it even happened, that this was trending towards this, and then you get all these decisions, and they were pretty much mostly boxing matches, all of them, or kickboxing matches.
Yeah.
And Muay Thai mixed in here and there, but, you know, very, very little wrestling, very little takedowns. And it just seems like these guys just, they're just that well matched, or they're evolving to that point where they just want to fight on the feet, punch and kick each other, throw a few elbows maybe. But and then you get the main event, it was all boxing.
Yeah.
Wasn't many kicks at all. And that was incredible. There's a couple of good knees, of course, but I actually predicted that Velasquez was going to win because, number one, my state of mind on that was, here's a guy going in there who's undefeated, number one. Number two, he's got like a whole country riding on him to win. And Brock Lesnar's got his fan base, but, I mean, I doubt the whole country of the United States was rooting for him over Cain Velasquez. I think Cain has a lot of good United States fans as well, of course. And I just think he had everything to gain, and Brock had everything to lose going in there. And, you know, especially now that there's...
You know, I think as long as the fight was in Minnesota, you know, the result will be the same, you know.
Right. But the other thing was,
you know, he's a different level fighter.
The other thing was, after the fight ended, I was saying to myself, you know, Brock just can't box. You know, he's not a very good boxer. We saw that in the last fight, and now we're seeing it here against Velasquez. And it's just, you know, it's the classic problem with guys who are overbuilt too, is they got short reach. So a guy with a little longer reach, a little bit of a better ability to get inside on a guy and land jabs, going to win every time. And Kane just fought the smartest fight he could and still brought the power. And the first round knockout of a guy like that is nothing to snuff, you know, sneeze at. That was pretty good. Now, what was your toughest fight over the years? You fought a lot of tough guys, as we mentioned, Paulo Thiago.
Each fight, you know, is different, but each time, you know, I respect my opponent. So sometimes, you know, the guys are not famous. We don't know them, but they're still dangerous, you know. You have people with background, Olympian background in wrestling. You have some judo guys. I fought a couple of different profile of fighter. I think I always try to get a good opponent, you know, with different skill. It doesn't mean that everybody know him. But at least, you know, I always fought good guys, you know. Mostly of my fight, you know, were against guys, you know, with skills. So then, because I respect all those guys, I almost do always the same kind of fight. You know, I'm very focused. I try to do my best. I don't try, you know, to do just the show and think, you know, I'm just better than the guy. I'm going to do easy fight. A fight is never easy, you know. You fight the guy who is in front of you, just want to beat you. So you have to respect that, you know. If you do a mistake, you're going to sleep. So, you know, I don't think that I have... I had one fight tougher than another one, you know. Just fought, you know, different guys like Paulo Thiago, Drew Fickett, and the last time Steve Berger, Nakamura. I fought a couple of good guys, you know. Each time the fight was different, but each fight, you know, bring something different to the table.
All right. I know we didn't touch on this last time, but how did you get your nickname, Hurricane, there?
I was a kid, you know. I was... when I started judo, and a couple of years after, maybe when I was 7 or 8, you know, because I was terrible on the mat, you know, my coach always, you know, has to call me and tell me, hey, be quiet, stay focused. I was focused, you know, but I was just always talking and always try to take down the guy, even when it was not the time to take them out, take them down, you know. I was just like... very active, you know, when I was on the mat, and my first teacher, you know, called me Hurricane. He gave me this nickname when I was a kid. Then, you know, I didn't have any more nickname, but when I started MMA, everybody wanna give you a nickname. Mm-hmm. So I said, at least if I have a nickname, I have to keep the same one I had when I was a kid, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was just to remember that, but. Is why right now I'm Hurricane, because I was already when I was a little kid.
That's great. That's a good nickname to have.
Yeah, that's funny, you know. It's not because I destroy the people more than anybody else. It's just because I was just like that when I was here, and I keep it.
You travel and you do damage. That's what you do.
Yeah. Yeah. I try.
Yeah. Now, looking at the sport as a whole, what do you love most about being involved in MMA?
You know, I'm a martial arts artist, you know. I love martial arts. And I think, you know, MMA bring all the ingredients we need, you know, to prove we can be the best, you know. We can do everything. That's the only sport where we can do all the techniques from different martial arts, you know, in the same time. And it's just what makes the fight exciting, and is why I love to practice MMA. And especially after my huge career in judo, you know, it was like, wow, it's like a new sport, but even better, you know. I really... love MMA more than what I love judo before.
Cool. And do you have a fight coming up? Are you working on making a fight? Anything going on?
Probably gonna fight in December. December 18th. I talked with one of the promoters in Costa Rica. He tried to make a show, I could fight Anthony Macias, UFC and pride veteran, or I could fight Johnny Carter, UFC veteran, WEC champion. I think I'm gonna fight one more time before the end of the year, and for sure, if I'm fighting, is because they make me fight a name, you know, UFC or pride veteran, you know, a tough fighter. Anyway.
Mhm. All right. And is there anything going on as far as did you just have a fight recently? Did you, in the last few weeks, did you just come off a good fight too?
I didn't get it.
Who was your last fight?
Oh, my last fight was in September 25th in Montreal, Canada. I fought a UFC veteran, Steve Berger, and I won by TKO in the second round.
And is there a favorite fighter out there that you have, somebody that you watch a lot of, that you see a lot of yourself in, or that you try to emulate at all?
Sorry?
Do you have a favorite fighter out there, somebody that you try to pick styles from, or watch?
No, I don't have any favorite fighter. Always watch the different fighter. Famous or not, and I try to pick different skills from everybody. I did the same when I was a judo guy, you know. I learned techniques from everybody, you know. Sometimes you have just a guy who come to the dojo twice a week, just do judo because he likes to do it, and he does something special. And you can pick this technique, you know, from this guy. And sometimes, you know, I used to train in judo with kids. I teach them. And sometimes when I used to do some wandering, I saw some technique, and you know, from kids, you know. And I tried to do it then, and he was working. So it doesn't mean that because the guy is champion, you're going to be able to take more skills from him. You just need to pick the technique you feel good for you, but it can be technique that you pick from anybody, you know. Just a guy who practice and he's not maybe a champion, but he can do a great stuff, you know, when he jumps in the cage. So I don't have any favorite fighter to pick technique. I like a couple of fighters, you know. I like to watch exciting fighters, like Anderson Silva for sure. I like Melendez, I like Alvarez, BG Penn. I like those kind of fighters, you know, who jump in the cage and try to finish the fight. So, yeah, you know, that's the only fighter who make be excited when I watch the fight. But no, to help me to get better, I don't take especially technique from those people.
All right. And looking at one fight down in Australia, actually, I knew what you're talking about, because you know, you see some of these more obscure people sometimes, or guys on smaller cards even, or like you just mentioned, you know, not even in a sporting situation. But I saw this one guy down in Australia, never seen it in a UFC fight or elsewhere, but he kept leaning over and punching the guy in the thigh. And he always got away with it. You know? Just lean over and just throw a right hand right to the guy's thigh, like a Charlie horse, or like the knee when you're up against the cage, to soften the guy's legs up. But he did with punches, and he just kept landing it because the guy never expected it. He never had to defend it before. You know, so you
went. Oh, yeah.
And there was another fighter, I forget his name, but he was a heavyweight boxer who used to throw a jab off like a fake uppercut, and they called it the smash.
Yeah.
I think it was a Canadian guy. I think it was Razor Ruddock, actually. But I looked it up online, and I started to do it a little bit. I mean, I never tried it in an actual sparring match yet, but I imagine it throws a lot of people off. You know? And that's one of the things I think MMA and boxing should start to learn from each other. Because there's
Oh, yeah. I think MMA should use more boxing, definitely.
And, you know, some of the things like that Muhammad Ali used, I was told that he used to chop guys in the shoulder with an open hand. And if you notice, you look back at a lot of his fights, it looks like he's pulling the guy down by the neck. And before he does that, he's just hitting him with the heel of his hand. And the story is his wife taught him some martial arts. So he tried to mix it into his boxing matches. And he was literally clubbing people in the neck with his hand a lot. And you can get away with little things like that in boxing all the time. And people don't use different styles like that. They don't think about that. They think about the orthodox, 1-2 punch style. And
everybody wanna look the same,
Right.
They don't try to find a different way, to be champion.
Mm-hmm.
I think you need to build your own style, and you can pick technique from everybody. Different sport, and then even when you move, some guys, they're gonna do MMA, they're gonna move like a karateka, they're gonna move like in karate. Some guys are gonna move more like wrestler. Some guys are gonna move more like boxer. But you can pick whatever you want, and then you mix it up, and you try to build your own style. I think that's the way a champion should think,
Yeah. Well, there's just so many different disciplines that are involved or could be involved. And, it's so much evolution going on all the time. You see literally different generations. Like you had the, obviously, the Gracie brothers dominating so long when they first started, and Royce Gracie there at the beginning of the UFC, beating everybody. And then you have these other young guys coming up. They got a little bit more of something else. It's kind of funny to watch some of the older class of the UFC. They go up against these young kids and they just get smoked. There's a few exceptions, but a lot of those old names that started out in the UFC, like Chuck Liddell. Well, what happened to him? Man? He can't beat anybody these days. I think you're going to still see him fight Tito Ortiz now, especially now that he just lost to Matt. Ortiz just lost to Matt Hamill. And that's just a couple of old guys fighting. That should be actually a good, well-matched fight, I think. They're kind of out of their prime. And it's some guys doesn't even happen to. They don't even get to their prime, it seems, with guys like Randy Couture. It just seems like, for him, the division outgrew him. He couldn't handle the weight difference between him and Brock Lesnar. It's just it's amazing, to watch not only the UFC, but the whole sport evolve. And the attitude, of course, of pleasing the crowd and, putting on a show and moving up the chain. It's becoming so important for these guys to get from the smaller leagues to the bigger leagues. It's just changing right before your eyes, and guys are trying to put everything into their style that they can. The trick is just getting the right combination together sometimes. Everything clicks for your type of style, but you definitely have to, pay attention to what you do best, too. If I were ever to do MMA, of course, I'd try to keep every fight on the feet, and I wouldn't use my legs a lot because I don't kick. I'd have a little wrestling and a little boxing, but, I wouldn't be throwing roundhouse kicks or anything. But it's just so amazing to watch. And sounds like you've been around quite a bit. You know your stuff. And great talking again. Is there anybody you want to give a shout out to or say hello to?
What?
Is there anybody you want to give a shout out to out there or say hello to?
I think to be successful, you know, we can't do our own way by ourselves, you know. So I just thanks all my teammates, you know, from Tim Tompkins, Sean, who teach us the Tepao Training Center, who give us the opportunity to train in the best condition. My main partner, Louis Dwyer, all my friends from France who stay here and train with me, my family who support me, my girlfriend, you know. Your success, you know, is also the success of all those people who stay around you every day and support you, you know. That's not just one person, you know, who go to the top. That's a group, you know, that's a couple of people, you know, who stay together and work together every day. And I think when one of them win, you know, all win, you know. So when I go to the top, if I'm going to the top, that will be all those people, you know, that we're going to go to the top with me.
Yeah. Well, even the guy that gave you your nickname is part of all of it, right? It all comes together in one package, and, you know, you're going that far, and, you know, you're working that hard to succeed. So it's great to be on the phone and do a great interview with you. I'm sorry about last week with the phone.
No, it's okay.
But, hey, you know, at least we get it done. We got it on two channels now instead of one. So more people will hear it, and I'm looking forward to watching you keep going with your wins and, you know, keep roughing up these UFC veterans. Maybe the new UFC guys will take an interest. All right.
Yeah.
I think you talked about Bellator, too. You might want to get into Bellator, their up-and-coming organization. So whatever happens, I'm sure we'll see you on TV one of these days. And
sure. Pretty soon.
All right. Yeah, that's the answer you like. But we'll definitely keep in touch, and best of luck on your future fights. And we will get together again down the road and talk about 10 years from now, maybe, about your championship run or something. Maybe five. No, but great talking to you, and keep up the good work.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right, have a good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye. So, folks, we're going to take a short break. I'm going to get another host on the line with us, Tony Penacal. The tornado, as we call him, Penacal. And he's going to tell us all about boxing. And very quickly, before we go on our little break here, I just want to let you know that the decisions, for the most part, of the UFC 121, you heard us just talking about that on the interview, but just wanted to run through the full results in case you didn't see it. Brock Lesnar got KTFO'd by Cain Velasquez. In the first round, he got roughed up pretty good. It's a pretty interesting fight, and we will talk a little bit about it when we get Tony on, but not too much. The rest of the card, of course, Jake Shields sort of dominated the fight. Didn't have a particularly vicious performance. Wasn't that exciting. But he beat Martin Campman in his debut in the UFC by split decision, round three, went to full three. Diego Sanchez beat Paulo Thiago. Yeah, very interesting comeback fight. Thiago was winning, and Sanchez came back, won the decision unanimous. Tito Ortiz lost a unanimous decision to Matt Hamill, as I was hoping for, and which we'll probably talk about later with Tony as far as the Chuck Liddell-Tito Ortiz matchup. That's probably going to be next. We also have Brendan Schaub versus Gabriel Gonzaga. Schaub won by decision unanimous. Court McGee beat Ryan Jensen by submission, round three. Patrick Cote lost to Tom Lawler by unanimous decision. Mike Guymon lost to Daniel Roberts by round one submission. Sam Stout beat Paul Taylor by round three decision. And Chris Camozzi beat Don Young by split decision. And finally, John Manson won over Gilbert Bell by knockout. And that was in round one. So we're going to be right back. This is Johnny Cash.
love the wind been blowing at my back. I was born to bring trouble to wherever I'm at. Got the number 13 tattooed on my neck. When the ink starts to itch, then the black will turn to red. I was born in the soul of misery. Never had me a name. They just gave me the number when I was young. Got a long line of heartache, I carry it well. The list of lives I've broken reach from here to hell. Bad luck wind been blowing at my back. I pray you don't look at me, I pray I don't look back. I was born in the soul of misery. Never had me a name. They just gave me the number when I was young. I was born in the soul of misery. Never had me a name. They just gave me the number when I was young. They just gave me the number when I was young.
Okay, folks, we're back. We're going to bring in Tony, the tornado, and two shakes of an inch tail. Here we go. See how Tony's doing after the rough Phillies loss the other night. 3-2. Probably doesn't want to talk about it.
You.
Tony!
How's everybody doing?
We're doing good. We got the interview, finally.
How'd it go?
It was good.
Did you ask any of my questions from last week?
No, but I was thinking to myself, you know what? We're just going to talk about this on the show because it'll give Tony another chance to talk about Pacquiao versus Mayweather. Because if you remember from last week, one of the questions you asked him that he took a while to answer, being Fareed Hurricane Kader, who I just got off the phone with. One of the questions that you had asked him was, you know, who's going to win, Pacquiao or Mayweather? And he went into a whole thing.
Happens, which I doubt.
He went into a whole thing about the boxing versus MMA debate.
Yeah, because he goes, I don't think either of them would really do good in MMA. Maybe Pacquiao would do better because he can punch, but they can't grapple. And I was like, that's kind of if they fought each other in boxing.
Yeah, right. I had to tell him, you know, hey, look, we asked this. But he picked Pacquiao, actually, and I said, that's who my money's on. I think you're still leaning towards Mayweather, if I remember correctly.
You know what? I am. But, you know, every day that passes, it goes a little bit closer to Pacquiao. And the reasoning behind this is...
Well, every day that passes, it gets closer to not happening.
Well, you know, that's true. And Rich, you know, as I said before... I don't think it'll happen. I don't, and I'm being totally honest. And I know it's like everybody wants to see this fight. It's the fight that could, quote-unquote, save boxing, which I don't think boxing really needs saving, but it definitely needs something to get people talking around the water cooler. I mean, Rich, you know how I always write previews for big fights coming up, and I'm going to write about Pacquiao Margarito. This is going to be my first one since Mayweather-Mosley. Now, granted, I've been really busy at work, and hopefully, knock on wood, things will slow down a little bit now that it's winter season. Didn't happen today. I wanted to slap a few people. But, you know, my thing is for the big fights, the ones that people want to see, write a preview. You know, we had Mayweather-Mosley. We had Pacquiao Cotto, like big fights like that. You know, we had Cotto Margarito, you know, Pacquiao De La Hoya, Hopkins Jones. Since the spring, when I wrote two almost back to back, being Hopkins Jones and then Mayweather Mosley, I haven't written one since because there hasn't been that defining fight that's going to say, oh man, people want to talk about this fight. Who's going to win? What's going to happen? You know, did you get that with like Klitschko versus Peter? No. Did you get that with you know, any of the other title fights recently? But you know, in the spring we had Sergio Martinez and Kelly Pavlik, very good fight, but not one you really wanted to write a preview on. You know, we've had the Super Six tournament, but there's been so much shuffling in and out of that, it's been hard to really sit down and write a definitive preview. Also, we had that fight the other week. We had Lucien Boutte in his fight against Jesse Brinkley, and as I said, got to give a puncher a chance, but Boutte didn't give Brinkley that chance. He beat him up pretty good and stopped him. But there hasn't been really been that defining title fight that everybody, you know, is anxious for me to read a preview. Everybody's anxious for me to write a preview about.
Right.
I mean, I'm going to write Pacquiao Margarito. I'm going to start that probably in a week or so. That way I can have it to you before the fight on the 13th.
There's a lot of talk about that this week. You know, like a win for Margarito would be bad for the sport, people are starting to say. Like, he has a chance. I don't know, I guess he has a puncher's chance, but I don't give him a chance. No.
I definitely give him a chance. I mean, how much of his legacy has been tainted? Because we don't know how many fights before the Mosley fight his raps were quote-unquote doctored. I mean, did he really beat up a guy like Cotto legitimately without any assistance from tainted raps? We can never answer that.
Right.
In fact, I'm looking at an article that came out in the latest Ring magazine, and it was talking about the fight. Now, you have Pacquiao is a solid 5-1 favorite, but there's a picture of them face-to-face, and Margarito's got about a good 5 inches in height on him. He's got, you know, some, you know, a weight advantage to him. Margarito has fought as high as junior middleweight his whole career, welter and junior middle. You're talking about a guy like Pacquiao that's started at 106, but you know what? We said that before. We said that when he fought De La Hoya. We said that when he fought Cotto. And look what he did to those guys. Does Margarito have a puncher's chance? Yes, but there's got to be that asterisk next to it. How punishing will Margarito be when his punches land if they are not quote-unquote tampered? We don't know that yet. I mean, he looked absolutely you know, impotent when he fought Mosley, but that could have been Styles May fights. You know, Mosley's a little different than Pacquiao. Pacquiao is like a come-in, dart, slash type of fighter, but he's got one-punch power to take you out. Mosley's a little bit different. Mosley's is like more that power boxing. You know, he doesn't throw as many combinations as he did earlier in his career, but he's a little flashier. You know, he's going to, you know, move. He's going to roll his hands. He's going to do a lot of feints, and maybe he was just freezing Margarito with that. We can't say, and he was a step ahead of him. In Margarito's only fight since Mosley fight, he looked ordinary. Let's just put it that way. He did not look like this devastating Tijuana tornado. He didn't look like the guy that tore Miguel Cotto to shreds. He didn't look like the guy that, you know, beat the hell out of Kermit Cintron. He looked like, you know, an average fighter. He looked kind of older, kind of slower. He didn't pack that same devastating power that we were getting used to. So, does he have a puncher's chance? We can't say that he doesn't, but the way I'm seeing it, and as a preview into my preview, I see Pacquiao's speed being the biggest difference in this fight.
Want to know who didn't have a puncher's chance going into last Saturday?
Who didn't have a puncher's chance?
Yeah.
Apparently Brock Lesnar didn't.
Hey! You picked up a nice
reference. I didn't see the fight. My friend Joey, in fact, he might be listening tonight. If all my compadres are listening, Joey, Danny, Kathy, Gianna, what's up, guys? Sorry I'm a little late tonight, but that was Richie's fault. But
yeah, yeah.
He invited me over to watch the fight, but I was staying in the thick of beating of my own watching the Phillies blow it in Game 6. So I was a little pissy mood about that.
Yeah, I was watching that early on. I saw the first inning. I said, oh, geez, Tony's going to be loving this. And then I turned it on later and saw that was the only runs they scored. And I was like, oh, no.
Yeah. Let's not even elaborate on it. I got a lot of theories, and I'm pissed off about every one of them. So I hope the fucking Giants lose because they pissed me off.
Well, you've got a conspiracy theory now going around this Lesnar loss because, of course, it has a wrestling segment to it, which is kind of interesting.
The Undertaker?
With The Undertaker, yeah. I don't know if you watched The Undertaker.
I saw that. I did see that. I was invited to watch the fight. I declined, stayed home watching the game. I was online later that night in a pissy mood and said, Lesnar dominated and KO'd. I said, am I reading this right? I said, maybe I'm reading Lesnar dominates and KO's.
I told a couple of my friends, the day of the fight, I said, what's going to happen is, he's going to come in there, Velasquez, with the whole weight of a whole country on his shoulders, and all of Mexico pulling for this guy. And Brock can't box, He's a striker. He's just,
right.
Brock cannot box, and Velasquez
right.
is a striker.
Yeah.
So basically,
he
had no chance.
Even when Brock was, wrestling in WWE, the biggest, strong guys. And, of course, WWE is entertainment, but they were doing a segment. He was getting ready to wrestle The Rock. And this is, I'm going back about 7-8 years ago. He's getting ready to wrestle The Rock. And they were showing, because these two guys were, they were legitimate athletes before they broke into professional wrestling. The Rock was, standout football star. Went to the University of Miami, almost went and made it in the NFL. And then, of course, Brock, just being an unbelievable amateur wrestler. This is at the time before he went to the UFC and before the time he tried his hand at pro football. But they were showing these two guys comparison of workouts. And the one thing they were showing Lesnar was hitting the heavy bag. And I'm like, as great as he is doing the push-ups on the chair and running up these mountains and pulling, trucks and all that, can't hit the heavy bag that well. And, there's some things you can teach better technique, but the thing about Brock, Brock is so muscle-pound. He is never going to be able to be a great striker. He's going to be more a guy that he can bait you down and club you to death.
Right.
Or get you, in a headlock like he did Carwin and just, squeeze your head till it pops like a zit. But he's never going to be a great striker. The thing is, when your shoulders and your chest and your biceps are so muscular, you are never going to be able to get that flexibility and that snap on your punches. So that's what guys are going to have to do if anybody fights him going forward. Is to keep it on their feet, because that's going to be his weakness. I mean, if he gets you down in a grounded position, you're in deep shit, being totally honest. I mean, he's so powerful and, got that great amateur wrestling, background. Well, if it was over, like I said, Brock or Lesnar dominating KO, I read it more in depth, and the next day I confronted by WWE wrestler afterwards. I'm like, what the hell does it? Me being a big wrestling fan, I'm like, I got to see this. So I did, watch the clip with The Undertaker. I know The Undertaker, he's been a big, he's a big boxing fan. He's a big mixed martial arts fan. And that's one thing that I know when Brock was wrestling 6-7 years ago, him and The Undertaker, they had like their quote-unquote wrestling feud, but you never heard more about it. The two guys wrestle. Sometimes they're good friends. Sometimes they're not. I don't know the backstory behind all that we saw the other day where the Undertaker was like, it's personal, Now people are saying,
Idiot answer was kind of puzzling because it's something like, I just think he needs to train harder. Like, did he have proposed to train somewhere with him or maybe give him steroids? I don't know. That was like,
I don't know.
It was a weird answer for the first thing to come out of his mouth and then just say, oh, it's personal. It's between me and him. And then the people going out and trying to put the whisper out there that they could be wrestling at WrestleMania. And because Undertaker is undefeated at WrestleMania, he could be asking Brock to come back and take a dive. It's like, it's just going out there, and people are just going their own way.
That's an interesting point, because, we do have the Undertaker undefeated at WrestleMania streak. Undertaker also was my great Halloween costume last year. Whatever you do, don't babble out what I am anymore, because, here's how pathetic people are getting, Rich. Here's how pathetic. And if any of my crew was listening to this, I'm at work yesterday. I get a text message. And alluding to what I'm going to be for Halloween from someone that I never told. And I tried to play dumb, and because I'm good at that. And then the guy follows it up by, he goes, by the way, I like your show. Well, when he heard that I announced it on the air, he listened to like our last three or four shows till he found it. I said, which show did you listen to? He's like, a lot of them.
Yeah.
I said, oh, did you like the 20 question segment? He's like, it was more like 10 questions. I'm like, it was 13, Dick.
Well, there you go. You're promoting us. Get people to play games, do it. Listen to our show.
20 questions is shit, dude.
Well, we got a whole lot of news other than, fight schedules and all that, too, to cover. And one of the biggest things that you'd be interested in here is James Toney. His fight purse was withheld on the UFC, the eve of his UFC debut. And the only fight he'll ever fight in the UFC, because apparently I didn't know this, but he's been released already, of course. But he learned of an IRS lien, and his fight purse was withheld on the night before this fight.
Wow.
And that's not the only part. Tony's camp currently is in litigation with the government agency to recover a reported $500,000 payout, is what this article says. Now, his management disagrees with the payout total. Of course, there's probably some of it went to them. But obviously, Tony is not scheduled to receive a win bonus nor a cut of the event's pay-per-view profits. And this is on MMAJunkie.com. Tony was supposedly enraged just prior to the contest and just wanted to hit Randy. But, what this whole lean thing did to his fight performance is kind of beside the point. The big point in this thing is what the lawyer says at the end of it, or the manager or whatever here, Arthur. He disputes the $500,000 purse reported as Tony's payout by the Massachusetts State Athletic Commission, and said the actual amount is lower. Per its statutes, the MSA distributes checks cut from the promoter to fighters following an event, provided the fighter has not committed any rules violations, punishable by fine and or suspension. Ronnie Dreimer, a representative from the MSAC, did not comment. All right, here's the part. Arthur said, Arthur said he was shocked that he wasn't notified of the lien by UFC officials, and he did not speak with any representatives after the fight. If this would have been boxing promoter Dan Goosen, I would have known about it the minute he got it, he said. This is James Toney's representation here. I've been with Dan many years, so I can't compare him with the UFC. That's interesting, you know. Why didn't they let him know right away? Why would they do that? Did they think that he was going to fight any less if he knew about it? They want to keep it quiet from him? Just lay it out and let him not know that he wasn't going to get anything from it? Isn't that just dicking? No, it doesn't. That's the thing, though. It doesn't matter how it affected his performance at all. But the fact that they waited to tell him, the UFC waited to tell him. They didn't even notify him. Period. These guys had to find out some other way. But the UFC gets notification of it, and they don't pass the word along. That's kind of shady to me. The first phone call I'd be making. Like, what is this? Why am I getting calls from the IRS, buddy? What's going on? Do you need money? Did you take this fight just because you needed money? No, I don't know. That's kind of shady to me. That's worthy of a little bit further investigation. You know how I like to throw the UFC under the bus on purpose, but this one, they kind of threw themselves under the bus if this is true.
Right. I got a funny story for you. This friend of mine, actually, I know him too. I've known him my whole life. He's a friend of my dad's. You know, him and my dad grew up. You know, they were friends since they were like 2 years old. And his youngest daughter got married. So they're down in Florida for the wedding. My dad was going to go, but he hadn't been feeling well, so he couldn't go. So my dad gets a call from his buddy down in Miami. He goes, guess who we had dinner with last night and smoked cigars? My dad's like,
you got to tell me. But I said, well, we were at this one restaurant because my dad's friend's cousin is very wealthy. He does, like, cigar tasting and wine tasting. He's like a big aficionado of all that shit.
Mm-hmm.
So we're at this very, very high-end restaurant. This guy's very wealthy. It's a high-end restaurant, and they're sitting there having cigars, and the guy's like, oh, my God, you know, you don't have any of my cigars here. The guy's like, to the manager, he's like, okay, go on, get some of your cigars. So they bring some of his cigars in. They go back in the cigar room, and they're sitting down smoking cigars with Don King.
Yeah, he must have been drinking.
I'm sure he was. Not the same on a normal bank, you know?
Well, I'm sure you're going to be upset about this, but Dana White's revealed on ESPN the UFC is going to launch their own network now.
I heard that.
Is this shit?
Where the hell did they hear that? I don't remember, but I heard that. I'm just going in to change real quick. I'm hot as hell. I was downstairs while you were waiting to call. I was downstairs working, getting ready for the party tomorrow night.
Oh, there you go. Get this. Boxing is the next big thing in MMA. There's an article on fighthype.com that's pretty interesting. Is boxing the next big thing in MMA? And we just got off the phone with... Fareed Kader, who talked a little bit about why it seems that boxing is becoming such a big part of MMA lately. The whole philosophy is that, you know, in the UFC and in an MMA period, you got to put on a show to advance yourself, you know, to get to the title fighter, you know, really turn some heads, not only the fans, but the managers and the promoters. You really have to put on a show. And what is the crowd like that?
I'm going to give you my opinion on it. I'll be right with you.
Yeah. You know, basically the idea is just to go and beat the crap out of the guy toe-to-toe, make the crowd happy, make the viewers at home happy, et cetera. So boxing has seemingly become a much bigger part of the UFC lately and a lot of the big cards that I've watched lately. And for Kader kind of put the whole thing in perspective.
I'm back.
He just basically told us, hey, listen, you know, this it's just the facts of the matter is you got to put on a performance and, you know, you got to do what the people came to see. You got to finish fights. So it's kind of interesting.
Look at it this way. No disrespect to either sport out there. Let's look at it here. Okay. If you're watching a fight, and I'm not talking about a UFC fight, I'm not talking about, let's just say two guys are fighting on the street, okay? How would you rather see that fight end? The guy getting another guy in like a front face lock, or the guy like gives up or submits? Or the guy knocking his block off with a couple punches and dropping him out cold?
Mm-hmm.
I remember when UFC was first really starting, I'm going back about 15 or so years, because we got a couple of the pay-per-views, like Ken Shamrock versus Royce Gracie, or we did the one with, there was like a tournament, and Gracie met Dan Severn in the finals, and it was basically 30 minutes. 30 minutes and a 5-minute overtime. Well, a guy like Gracie fought his whole time in the back. So the fight with Severn, it went 15 minutes of one guy laying on top of the other guy. Now, granted, that's why I think they put in rounds now to help keep it a little bit less monotonous. But it was Gracie just on his back, Severn mounting him, but Gracie just blocking all of his offense. 15 minutes into that, Gracie gets in a chokehold, taps him out. It wasn't exciting. And I think that's kind of I never really got back into it as a fan. That goes the other way. Granted, there's some boring-ass fights out there where the guys clinch or where the guys hold or the guys just aren't engaging each other. But let's, like, that fight, Severn and Gracie, it ends with a choke at it for 15 minutes. Another fight, you might have two guys moving back and forth. A guy gets drilled, he buckles, he goes down. That's a, oh, shit, that's like an oh, shit moment. Everybody jumps up, everybody stands up at the same time. I think that's why they're saying is boxing the next big thing in UFC. And the reason I think that answer is yes, because you two guys, if they're striking each other, you have the chance for that oh shit moment.
Yeah. Well, in this last weekend's fight, though, it's kind of had a bad result because, you know, you had a whole card with almost all decisions. You know, these guys, they turn it into a sparring session rather than a real boxing match. And it's like, gets to the point where the crowd's even booing when they're on their feet, you know, trying to punch each other's lights out. But I don't know. It works both ways. You got the main event there with Brock Lesnar just getting pounded the hell out in the first round, and it's all boxing. A little bit of knees here and there, and a couple kicks, but mostly boxing. And you know, you have an exciting fight. But some of the other ones, they won all three rounds, and it was like, geez, are we going to ever see a knockout tonight? You know, so it's a little more than just the boxing. You know, it's the you know, the best of boxing, the Mike Tyson mentality, really, is what they're looking for. They're looking for that guy that just comes in there and just destroys people, no matter who you put in front of him, you know. And the only guy they really got like that right now is Anderson Silva in MMA that I've seen, who's really reigned a while with his title. Nobody's been able to take him down. He's slacked off a little bit recently. He almost had a Buster Douglas moment, but... he's about as close as you get without the knockout power. He's more submission and just own you in a fight. You know, just dismantle you piece by piece, whether he knocks you out or not, or submits you or not. But, you know, his style is starting to get a little bit questionable after his last fight with Chael Sonnen, which we're going to have a rematch of. But getting back to boxing, I don't know what's coming up this weekend. It's Mayweather-Pacquiao fight isn't coming up at all. I don't see.
But I was saying.
Margarita. When's that? Next week? The Margarita fight?
It's 2 weeks. It's on the 13th. Down in Dallas. I didn't know how much I hate the Dallas Cowboys. I am rooting for the Texas Rangers, though, right now. I hate the Dallas Cowboys.
You're throwing a party this weekend for the injury that happened there last Sunday night, right? Was it Sunday night or Monday?
Oh, absolutely.
Monday.
Actually, you know what? I don't have a whole lot against Tony Romo. I mean, I used to really hate the Dallas guys of, like, the late 90s and shit, you know, or the early to 90s, like the Michael Irvins and Emmitt Smiths. And Troy Aikman, I never really hated that much. I mean, he was just kind of a quiet guy. I really hated Irvin more than anybody. I hated Deion Sanders a lot. Leon Lett, I hated. Then I had, like, recently, like, Cosmic Jones and those guys. But Tony Romo, I really don't hate him that much. Now, if you want to hear something fun, here's a Halloween costume I suggested for my mom this year. She won't do it. And my mom is madder than I am about the Phillies losing. And she now hates the Giants. She's all pissed off. And I said, Mom, did you see that one relief pitcher for the Giants? She goes, which one? I said, Romo. I said, the Giants have a Romo, too. And I was like, well, why don't you go with him for Halloween? She goes, how am I going to do that? I said, well, look at the guy. I said, he looks like he's a freaking Al-Qaeda warrior. He's got a big, bushy black beard. I said, get a Romo jersey. I said, or make one. Get a big, bushy black beard and wear a Taliban turban. I said, that's a great costume. I'm not doing that. And I'm like, oh, come on, that'd be funny.
Well, I'm just looking at the BoxRec record book here. And, up in Montreal on Friday, we got Hector Camacho Jr.
Oh, dear Lord.
52-3-1 with 28 knockouts, fighting David Lemieux. 23-0 with 22 knockouts.
I've seen David Lemieux. You know what? This is a good step up for David Lemieux. It really is. I've seen him. I saw him fight on ESPN.
Oh,
I've been very impressed by him. And you know what? You know how I feel about the Camacho Jr. and Sr. And Jr.'s record is what? What'd you say? 52-3?
Yeah.
I don't think he's ever fought a ranked contender in that entire, you know, 55 fights.
I don't think he's
fought anybody in the top 10. And if he did, that might have been, might be his three losses. You know,
after this one, I think there's going to be a KTFO on these two.
I would love to see it.
Knock the fuck out. David, he's fighting for the WBC International Middleweight title on top of all this. So he's going to beat down a Camacho and get a title.
Nice.
And as we talked about earlier with Fareed, we had a little bit of the MMA versus boxing debate discussion, and I brought back the point that, hey, you know, the UFC and the MMA might be skyrocketing in the media ratings in the United States. You know, and might be beating boxing in that respect, but you go worldwide in places like Mexico, you know, there's like a fight every night. These guys are boxing in the streets. You know, they're not doing MMA. Well, some of them are, but not as much as Australian boxing. But we got a light welterweight fight that I wanted to mention down in Mexico, Mexico City, on Friday. It's put on by Golden Boy, actually. It's going to be on HBO Friday, supposedly. Pablo Cesar Cano, who is 20-0 with 15 knockouts and one draw, fighting for the NABF light welterweight title against Juan Carlos Batista, 20-2 with 13 knockouts. And not too much other interesting fights on this card. Kind of small-time fights, but that one kind of is going to be a pretty good fight, I think. Batista versus Cano. And we got Cesar Vasquez in Mexico, Baja California, Mexico, also on Friday, with a vacant WBC Mundo Hispano Super Featherweight title. Say that 10 times fast. He's Cesar Vasquez is 20-0, 13 knockouts, fighting Antonio Meza, who's 24-8, with 15 knockouts. And let's see what else we got worldwide. We're still on Friday here. I know we talked about this last week, but last week didn't really get recorded. Mike Tyson is going to be an ambassador of boxing in China.
Yeah, he's a good ambassador.
Yeah, he doesn't even know what it entails yet. It's kind of funny. Why don't you tell me, he tells the reporters at his press conference. That'll be interesting. We'll see if boxing starts to get put on the map in China as Mike Tyson's involved. All right, we got a big card in Germany here. Might as well talk about because we got a lot of female and male titles on the line. This is in Rostock, Mecklenburg-Vorpommern, Germany. And the main event is a 12-round middleweight fight for the IBF middleweight title between Sebastian Sylvester, 33-3, with 16 knockouts, one draw, fighting Mahir Oral, who is 28-2 with two draws and 11 knockouts. And then we have a phenomenal female fight here. Somebody's always got to go at welterweight. We have Cecilia Brekus, who's 14-0 with two knockouts, fighting Michaela Loren, who is 6-0 with one knockout. And this is for the WBC female welterweight title and the WBA female welterweight title and the WBO female welterweight title. So it's for all the marbles. Dominic Quinn is also fighting on this card. Wait a minute.
Oh, who's he fighting?
Fighting Kubrat Pulev, at heavyweight. 8-0 with 5 knockouts. Gwynn is 33-6 with 1 draw and 22 knockouts. And he hasn't fought much in the UFC and in the USA that recently. I think the last fight I saw him on was on Friday Night Fights a year ago at least. So he's fighting in Germany. He's a big star. All right, well, it's got a lot of mismatches going on. They're fighting Nicaragua on Saturday. Not much for fighters on that card, though. Pretty interesting fight in Cebu, Philippines. In Cebu City, we have Super Bantamweight 10-rounder A.J. Bernal, 22-1-1 with 18 knockouts, fighting Luis Alberto Perez, 26-4 with 17 knockouts. That'll be interesting. We have our mismatch of the week in the Philippines as well. I don't even know. Loilo? I don't know. I don't know how to pronounce that one. Loilo City, Philippines. We have the main event featherweight 10-rounder, 12-0, Janjan Guanzong fighting Robert Rubilar, who's 6-19. Yikes. We got something going on in New Jersey on Saturday. Yeah, we got Jorge Diaz, 14-0, undefeated, with 9 knockouts at featherweight, fighting a 10-rounder against Emmanuel Lucero, who's 24-5 with 14 knockouts and 1 draw. We have Jeremy Bryan, 14-1 with 7 knockouts, fighting an 8-rounder at light welterweight, with Ronald Cruz, 9-0 with 6 knockouts as well. Here in New Jersey, the fight to watch. Bronco McCart fighting this Saturday in Michigan. I think I read about this. This is his own, the high school he graduated from. And he's fighting what will probably be his last fight there. It's a 12-round middleweight fight. 52-9, 1 draw is Bronco McCart. 31 knockouts. He's fighting Michi Munoz, who's 22-5, with 15 knockouts. And there's nobody with any record close to either of those guys on the rest of the card. Is that a high school? I mean, come on. Well, how many people can get back into a high school? I don't know. Maybe a pretty big one. Let's see what else we got. We're up to Sunday. We got a pretty interesting card in New South Wales, Australia on Sunday, Halloween here in the United States. I don't know if Australia celebrates Halloween. We got a couple 12-rounders for the main event. Middleweight, Daniel Gill, 23-1 with 14 knockouts, fighting Roman Karmazin, 40-3 with 2 draws and 26 knockouts. And also a lightweight 12-rounder between Leonardo Zapavigna, 24-0 with 16 knockouts, and Ji-Hoon Kim, 21-6 with 18 knockouts. Also on that card is super middleweight Shannon Taylor, 50-8 with 3 draws, 36 knockouts, and Junior Talipo, 16-1 with 5 knockouts. That's an eight round fight. Robert Medley at middleweight, 29-3, 19 knockouts, fighting Jason Lahoulier on this card, 21-3 with 1 draw at middleweight. That's about it really for that card. We'll get into next week. These are the big boxing matches. UFC doesn't have a big event coming up until November 13th, from what I've seen. Not much else going on. Of course, we had the UFC 121. Didn't really talk much about that, although I did run down the scores. Brock Lesnar, of course, we talked about that fight. We had a lot of decisions. One of the comeback fights of the night was actually Paulo Thiago. Looked like he was kicking ass and just fell apart. And Diego Sanchez just came out of nowhere and started dominating the fight. So it was a really good fight. So we have Bellator Fighting Championships 34 going on tonight at the Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino. Judgment Day 2 going on tonight in South Carolina. M1 Challenge 21 tonight in Leningrad, Russia. Let's see. We go to tomorrow. We got Vengeance from West Beach, Saipan. Fright Night 2010 at the Rhode Island Convention Center in Providence, Rhode Island. Lion's Den at Stockholm, Sweden on tomorrow night. Matrix Fights 3 in Philadelphia.
Nice.
Go to the Philadelphia Sheet Metal Union Workers Hall. You can watch Matrix Fights, Tony. I'll get you in for free. I'll just make a phone call. You got nothing better to do tomorrow, right?
Yeah, I'm at a Halloween party.
Oh, I forgot about it. Well, it's there if you want to go. Anyway, we also have a fight in the Philippines, National Capital Region, Rogue Magazine's Black Tie Brawl 2010. URCC is putting that on. Wild Bill's Fight Night 31, Wild Bill's Atlanta, Duluth, Georgia, United States. Of course, we have King of the Cage in Mainstream in Minnesota, United States. Sengoku Raiden Championship 15 in Tokyo on the 30th. Operation Octagon 13 in Sterling, Virginia on the 30th. We have Jose Carrera Gymnasium in Brazil, Bowery Combat on the 30th. And we don't have anything until the 3rd, which is next week. So not much except tomorrow night's a big MMA night, really. We got M1 and Bellator Fighting Championships. Those are the other two big ones under the UFC, so I'm sure those two will be worth watching. The rest of these you probably can't watch unless you're there. But I don't know, you got anything else? It's going to be a short show this week, I think.
Well, I don't have really much going on in the boxing world. You know, we're just waiting for, next quote-unquote big fight. Kid from Philadelphia's fighting on that undercard, Mike Jones. Real nice kid. I met Mike. He's up and coming. He's undefeated. He's just slowly, stepping up the ladder. So this is it's going to be his really next big fight. And in fact, getting on, a Pacquiao pay-per-view card is definitely a step in the right direction. Now he's got to take advantage of it. The one thing they recommended that he not do, being a Philadelphia guy, is do not wear an Eagles jersey into Dallas Stadium. You want to get the people behind you. You want to become impressive. You want everybody to like you. You don't want them booing you from the start.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's see what we got for Google alerts here. Big boxing news, I don't know. Of course, there's now a little bit of a controversy with that Linda McMahon run for Senate there in Connecticut. Something like they're like spending money to defend her honor somehow, because I guess there's been some stuff put out that they don't like, that they don't think is true about her, and so the WWE has been running commercials saying.
Yeah, I watched a few of them actually online. The thing is. Of course, you want to look at a person's, past, the company that they worked for. But, you can't, it's shady. I mean, it's hard to talk, hard to say, because you have arguments on both sides. Okay, where did WWE start? When it was WWF, okay, it started with the Hulk Hogan era. That's when they bought it out. Vince McMahon bought it out from his father, expanded it. They really did a lot. Opening up, making it a national powerhouse instead of a regional territory. But then there was the steroid allegations back in the early 90s. Of course, stemming from the late 80s, in the early 90s, Vince McMahon had a big, charges brought against him. He ultimately won. He was found not guilty. So it's like, well, that's kind of a yes and a no against her. It's a yay. I was found not guilty. Me and my husband, we were found not guilty. But the thing is, the charges were brought against her for a reason. And you had, just some of the things that they've done, some of the storylines they've done. It's hard to defend when you have, transsexual oral angles, pimps and hookers and, black gangs and Mexican gangs and all that, and hitting people with pipes and running them over. Yeah, it's for entertainment, true, but, it is still, they've actually toned it down a lot, and I think they did that, not because, the moralists were getting on their case, but I think because Vince knew that, he started toning it down about 3-4 years ago, and I think because he knew his wife was going to try to get in, a political office, and, that was going to be a definite thing against her. So, that was that. But then
the other
you have
thing is, I've seen a couple articles talking about how, you know, it's basically the whole ploy behind her trying to get into the Senate in the first place is to protect their money, yeah, to protect the big business and the major corporations and the billionaires rather than the little people, you know. What does a woman like her get involved in politics for when the family business is worth almost $1 billion? You know, if not over $1 billion by this point, face value, maybe. I don't know. It's kind of a weird scenario. But then you got, you know, like, it seems to me WWE is really dying out. You know, the whole professional wrestling scene has really fallen off the map.
A lot of times on Mondays, it's more like for force of habit. You know, I'm not really.
Anyway, a guy who's not falling off, Kelly Pavlik, is back. It's been 6 months since the world last saw Kelly Pavlik. And he was bloody and beaten at the hands of Sergio Martinez. Since then, he's all over the place, I guess. This article says he had reached his potential and only more years of punishment awaited him back in the ring. But others, including his father, Mike, and manager Cameron Duncan, said that a change in trainer was in order. So they replaced Jack Lowe, who had guided Pavlik since he was 9, and they wanted to get a more experienced hand like Freddie Roach or Manny Stewart. Pavlik heard it all, and a lot of people said, I lost my confidence, he said, with the interview at SI.com, that he was distracted, that that wasn't the right case. Fighters lose. I know what happened in the fight. I know why I lost. Big deal. Okay. So what he needed more than anything else was a break, I guess. Now, let's see what the heck he did. I'm trying to get through this real quick. His body ballooned to 178 on the night of the fight. That's no good.
He was having a hard time making weight.
Yeah. Went back to Youngstown and shoved boxing out of his brain, jetted off to Hawaii to celebrate his second anniversary with his wife. And he played with his two children, he golfed, and he let boxing go. Slowly, the hunger came back. By mid-July, he started thinking about working out. In August, he started playing basketball and cross-training. In September, he was ready to get back in the ring. So he pretty much took the summer off, basically, is what he says. Now he's getting into the gym. He's going to spar and run. New cut man, new nutritionist, and he didn't replace his trainer. Lowe doesn't want to do it. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. No need for a change. God forbid I lose one fight. That's the way it is. That's the way it is always going to be. So he's standing by his man there. It's his fault that he lost the fight, and he's coming back. Pavlik doesn't know what his future holds. He will fight Vera at 164 pounds. Who's Vera? Which Vera? Brian Vera. November 13th, Pavlik will face Brian Vera at Cowboy Stadium in Arlington, Texas, on the undercard of the Pacquiao-Margarito fight.
It'll be actually a very interesting undercard.
Very true. And also, we talked about a little bit about steroids. Now, this story's coming out. Actually, it came out in August, but I didn't catch it until now. Top 5-ranked UFC heavyweight Shane Carwin. Well, he was in the news today because he pulled out of his next fight, by the way, because he's got some back issues. Going to have surgery, maybe. But Shane Carwin has been named as one of 22 professional athletes who obtained steroids from an online pharmacy based in Mobile, Alabama, according to the Alabama news site. AL.com. Carwin was named as a past customer of Applied Pharmacy Services after a federal judge handed one of its pharmacists, J. Michael Bennett, a 4-year prison term for selling anabolic steroids produced in Mobile. Carwin had no comment but plans to make a statement at a later date, and this was a case that was related to clinics that shipped out steroids to 17 different rogue doctors between August 24th and August 2004, I should say, and August 2006. And the prosecutors referred to the defendants as drug dealers in lab coats. UFC did not pick up Carwin until 2008. He made his mixed martial arts debut in October of 2005. So it was on the tail end of when they were doing this, I guess. So they're saying that maybe he wasn't doing it at the time that he was famous or whatever. But it's kind of interesting. Carwin has never failed a drug test in his professional fighting career, the article also says, and this is the big part. The other pro athletes referenced in court documents include baseball players, bodybuilders, and pro wrestlers, most notably former WWE champion Kurt Angle. And the report does not detail whether prosecutors plan to pursue legal action against any of them. And another sort of weird twist, another doctor from the same town in Colorado, Dr. Kelly Wade Tucker, was sentenced to 21 months in prison for his role in the case, while a third, Dr. Scott Corliss, also pled guilty to taking part in the ring. Carwin is a resident of Greeley, Colorado, though no reporting or evidence mentioned in news accounts connects him to the ring. And this pharmacy, APS, was also one of the pharmacies named in the Mitchell Report, an investigation of rampant steroid use in Major League Baseball. Among the players linked to the pharmacy in the report were Jose Canseco, John Rocker, Gary Matthews Jr., and Jerry Harrison Jr. So steroids, there you go. That's a big story on steroids. It's all connected.
Yeah.
Even to the MMA world. Bad for you, though. Don't do that stuff.
Not good.
Anyway, that's the big boxing news and many tidbits that I can come up with. Not much else going on this weekend. But we'll have plenty to talk about next week, I'm sure. We'll get a good guest on. I think we're actually going to have a couple guys from an MMA card, King of the Cage card, I think. Let's see, Gladiator Challenge, Impulse. We have a couple guys from that on, and then we'll get back to boxing the week after that. We'll get some boxing guests. I'll surprise you.
Okay.
But until then, thanks for stopping by, everybody. And we'll see you next week.
I'll have some pictures posted on my Halloween costume in a few days.
All right.
All right, man. I'll talk to you later.
Can't forget that.
Peace out to all my posse. I'll see a lot of you tomorrow night. All right, bye.
Good night.